Hi Jets fans, it's Dr. Emma here with you for a special edition of the Jet Stream, where tonight we are going to review our ACL, whatever it's called, pre-qualifying round. Luke, you can tell me the technical term when I introduce you, against Persija Jakarta. You can tell we're professionals, everybody. You just heard Luke there, so I'll introduce him. Luke is here to help me review this game tonight. Thanks for coming, Lukey.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for having me, Dr. Emma. It was the ACL preliminary qualifier round two.
Preliminary, that is the word I was looking for. I was like, pre? What is pre the short for? Words are hard. Yeah. Also to join and me, who... Sorry, Lukey.
Sorry. I was just going to say, as per the kid behind me last night, Persija Jakarta.
Oh, that's
cute.
I quite
enjoyed that. That was awesome. So, yeah, glad to be here.
That's really cute. I would feel less bad, but that kid doesn't have to say it on a podcast, and I just butchered it. I'm not very good with languages. My problem is I speak Norwegian, and every other language I ever try to speak, I then just put all the words Norwegianly. So that's how you would have said it in Norwegian. That's my excuse. Also here to review this special game with me is Andy. Welcome back, Andy.
Yes, great to be here. So let's get into it.
Yeah, and also once we finish talking about this game, we're going to be rolling straight into our preview for Melbourne City coming up on Friday night. Lots of football happening in the Hunter. People are going to be footballed out soon. Let's start with our opening question. This was Dave's opening question, but also fits perfectly with a little bit of a rage rant I had about lunchboxes and mums judging other mums for what they put in their kids' lunchboxes earlier this week on Twitter. So my question is, boys, what do you miss from your school canteen? This question probably would be better if you guys weren't both like 12, but what do you miss from your canteen last week, boys? Lukey?
Okay, so about the whole, like, mums judging other mums based on what's on their kid, what's in their kids' lunchboxes. Quick story. When I was in preschool, parents often went up to my mum and was like, what's this yellow sauce that Luke has on his sandwiches? Because my child keeps talking about Luke's yellow sauce sandwich, and they want to have it, and we don't know what it is. And my mum's like, it's just mustard on a sandwich. It's just mustard on bread.
Peak exotic. For that. I'm wondering where you went to school, if that's the case.
What was that, sorry?
Where haven't they heard of mustard? Where did you go to school?
Oh, it was just it was when I was like 3 or 4, and I don't know if I could say mustard, so it was just yellow sauce, and then everyone else was like, I want yellow sauce, and I didn't know what yellow sauce was.
That's pretty cute. And did they have yellow sauce at your school canteen?
They did not, but at my school canteen, the thing I miss most is the Mammy noodles. You know, the ones that had the blue little monster thing on the front of them?
We went to school in very different generations and socio-demographic areas, so no, we did not have those.
Okay.
So, Andy, do you know them?
It's like these little noodle packets that I would eat, and yeah, I miss those.
Oh, so like eating the two-minute noodles dry?
Yeah, pretty much.
But they were meant to be dry. Oh, right. I didn't know that was a thing. Andy, did you have those at school?
We did, and just on that, I was walking through Aldi the other day, and they actually sell them by the bag with, like, the individual packets, and they're, like, $2.50 a bag, so feel free for anyone to get on that. But my answer would be chicken chippies, or chicken cujons, as they're now called. I've been able to obviously buy them since, but I don't know, it just doesn't have the same vibe as or taste as, you know, the ones that have been in a pie warmer all day before you get them. But I would always run out of sauce, so it was always kind of terrible. But yeah,
you need that authentic school canteen experience.
That's
for
true.
The goujons.
Yeah, I'm the food scientist and I don't even know what you guys are talking about right now.
They're like little fish fingers but chicken, if that makes sense.
How are they different to chicken nuggets?
Have you seen chicken fries from like Hungry Jack's?
Yeah, so you guys have to remember I was a vegetarian for most of my life. So are they like long thing McNuggets?
Yeah, basically. But like a lot more like breadcrumby than the nuggets you get from Macca's.
Right. Well, this has been an education for Dr. Emma tonight.
Kind of like a smaller, thinner chicken tender.
Interesting. Yeah. And those are better from the school canteen. Like, I dig like that vibe. Why aren't they just called chicken fingers? No, wait. Now that I've said that out loud, I know why they're not called chicken fingers. Oh, dear. Moving on. Mine's probably banana milk. I don't know where real world you get banana milk. But when I was at school, they had this everyone drink more milk campaigns. We had this milk called Dinomite. And it came in different colors with different dinosaurs as the character for the milk. And I really liked the banana. And I don't think they sell that in adult stores.
Nah, banana's been banished. Banana flavored milk. I had that a few times when I was in primary school from the canteen. And it was disgusting. I hated it so much.
Well, Luke is clearly wrong. And hopefully he says more things that are correct later on in the podcast. All right, let's move on from that controversy and my education on different shaped chicken snacks. As I mentioned in my not very articulate introduction, we've had a lot of football in Hunter lately, and we may have been a little bit footballed out. Turning up to the game last night for our preliminary qualifying round number two was only 6,673 people. Andy, do you think that's a bit disappointing?
I don't think so. I think expectation was probably pretty low for the Champions League that they would actually get anywhere. So I feel for a, you know, early midweek game to get a crowd like that, I didn't make it. But watching the telecast, I was like, wow, there's actually a lot more people than I thought there would be. So, yeah.
So you didn't come?
No, I didn't.
So you're one of the 24,000 who came to the grand final who didn't show up for this?
Absolutely.
When you look at it that way, and how many people were scrambling for tickets for the grand final, is it a little bit disappointing, Luke?
It is, but you get that anywhere. Once a team starts going well and everything, they're the hottest thing in town, and you lose a couple of games or you have a season like we've been having, and it's just natural that everything drops off. It's just the nature of the sport, unfortunately. For me, I thought 6,000, like 6,500 was pretty decent. You know, you can say we've got 11,000 members, but this was in addition to that. So you have to purchase the ticket yourself. And for me, having 6,000 people turned up, I was pretty impressed by that. And, you know, I think good work to the club for sort of condensing it down so everyone was down on the lower tier. And good work to the club for keeping the tickets really affordable. $10 for an adult as a member, that's crazy. And I was in the exact same seat that I was in for the grand final for a fraction of the price. So I was happy to see. You know, you could always say that you want more people there, but yeah, I think it was a decent turnout.
Yeah, it was a good idea to just open those bottom tiers. It definitely felt like more than 6,000 odd people there. I think it had a little bit more atmosphere than your average A-League home game. But yeah, I did expect more people, but you are right. A Tuesday night, it's pretty rough, especially when it goes to extra time. I thought I was going to be able to go home with a 7:30 kickoff, be home at 9:30, get a little bit of work done before I went to bed. And then when it went to extra time, I wished I'd drank more because I was definitely not going to get any work done when I got home. Let's just get, before we talk about getting to extra time and what happened there, what was your general vibe of the game, Luke? Do you think extra time was something we could have avoided if we'd tried a little bit harder, or do you think that extra time was inevitable with the match that as it played out?
I think we absolutely could have avoided extra time. You look how many times throughout the game that we got into a promising position but looked for an extra pass where there shouldn't have been, or we didn't shoot, or we just lost possession. It was crazy. I think now we're talking about games where we're getting like too many games in the Hunter and everything. Did Ronnie miss an open header last night, or was that against Wellington? Because he did score again, but he also, I feel, missed a very promising opportunity just afterwards. You look at a lot of the, you know, a lot of the chances we had in the first half and in the second half. We just couldn't get to the final ball, or as was the case most of the time, we get to a decent position where, you know, you probably look at a team that is, or, you know, you look at a team or players which are currently in good form and have a bit of confidence about them, would probably take the shot themselves. But, you know, they kept looking for that final pass to, I guess, make it easier for them, and it just didn't come off for us at all, really.
Mm. Shout out to my friend Rose, who, thanks to last night's game, learnt the phrase they need to work on their final pass. She's brand new to A-League. I don't even think she knew what she was saying, but by the end of the night, that was her assessment. So I'm well done on that. Andy, did you feel the same?
Yeah, I felt that it was another one of those games where the things that would have come off last season, mainly with Dimi, would, you know, normally those shots that he would have would go a lot closer, whereas if now, and taking nothing away from their goalkeeper, who seemed to just be able to save everything, a lot of Dimi in particular shots were, you know, either into someone or he would miss by a lot or whatever, whereas if previous season he would have come a lot closer if not scored those. And that seems to be just the story of the year, that the people that were so counted on to finish every time last season just can't this season, and that's why we haven't scored as many goals.
Do you think Dimi's got a confidence problem, or do you think he's a little too into the techers and not focusing on actually putting it away? What do you think's going on with him?
I don't think he has ever really had to carry a team in the way that he is now, where, you know, the focus seems to be very get it to Dimi and all that sort of stuff. But whereas if when he was at Brisbane, he was very under the radar and would come up with these, you know, shots from way out and whatnot. Whereas if now everyone knows what he can do, so the other teams put pressure on him, but also, you know, fans seem to put a lot of pressure on him to provide everything, when that's not necessarily what I feel his game is. If he can fall that bit under the radar, that works a lot better for him.
Mm, too much pressure, perhaps.
Indeed.
Mm, right. Well, I didn't want to start with the negatives, but while we're there, Roy equally as wasteful as Dimi in this match. Several offsides. Let's go to the stats. Offsides, we had 9 offsides. Were they all Roy, Luke?
Majority were. One of those, I think he ran from behind 2 players, so I'm willing to say one of those he was wrongly called offside, but the other ones were, you know, just silly, silly stuff. Like, yeah, I was watching it and I'm thinking, wait, is that Roy or is that Jair playing?
Mm. Yes, was that you who commented, has Jair stolen Roy's shirt? Was that you last night?
It wasn't, but I think had I been on Facebook when the post had gone up, that would have been me probably.
Yeah, no, I think that was very true. And, you know, we were all pretty satisfied with Jair being the one left out of this squad. And then to have Roy play like that, it was pretty goddamn hot last night. It was about 400,000 degrees in McDonald Jones Stadium. Do you think the heat was getting to them, Lukey?
Oh, absolutely, it would have. I was sitting in the shade. I was in the Western Grandstand. And at halftime, I stood up and I was an absolute mess, just sweating everywhere. So I can't imagine how it would have been, you know, trying to run around at that intensity for 45 minutes in the sun as it's still setting and everything. So, yeah, you can say it is, you know, not the best conditions to be in. You know, tonight would have been a much better night for it. Unfortunately, we don't have a say in the weather. But you still got to, in terms of the offsides and everything, you've still got to be switched on for that. Like, it was just silly, silly stuff.
Yeah, I started the hashtag last night, Sweaty Jetty Betty, because
That was absolutely me last night as well.
Yeah, so, there are a lot of very moist people in that stadium.
Yeah, like, that was me enough as it was in the Western Grandstand. I couldn't imagine being, like, sitting in the sun for that first half in the Eastern Grandstand. When I was buying my tickets, tried to put me over there, I was like, nah, I'm not having that.
I was right up the back against that, like, Besa block wall. So it had been absorbing the heat of the sun for the entire day. So even when the sun went down, that was like a little oven to keep me warm, which was
nice and toasty.
Yeah, that was delightful. I would have been very annoyed if we had have lost that game to have sat so uncomfortably for such a long period of time and then come away with nothing. All right, I didn't want to get caught up in the negatives, so let's distract ourselves with some overall stats and see whether that makes things better or worse. For total shots, we had 22 compared to Jakarta's 12. Shots on target, 10 for us, 6 for Jakarta. Possessions, pretty much 50-50, 53-47. Passes, 519 compared to 481, so not too different. Passing accuracy, not great for both teams, in the low 80s, high 70s. 16 fouls for us, 19 fouls for them. No yellow cards for us, surprisingly. Two yellow cards for them. And as I said, 9 offsides, probably all Roy. And pretty similar on the corners, 10 versus 13. Andy, did the game feel that balanced?
I was sitting there watching it, and I actually asked some of my family members that I was watching the game with, did the ref actually pack his cards with him? Because he didn't seem to, I think it was very late in the game, if at all, that he showed a yellow card for anything. But yeah, just the game seemed to flow enough, but it was just, you know, both teams weren't able to finish in the way they would have liked to, and it was just end-to-end with the same thing happening at either end. It was a crossover and someone would be there to just miss it, and that made for a pretty interesting game.
Do you agree, Luke?
It's a lot. The stats seem a lot more even than I expected. When you said that Jakarta had about 480 passes, that surprised me because I thought for the most part we controlled a lot of the game. You know, they had a couple of patches there, in particular about halfway through the first half, where it seemed like we couldn't get the ball out of our own half, that they just kept coming and coming. But I don't remember, like, I don't recall them sort of dominating us too much apart from that. You know, they had a couple of back-to-back corners throughout the game, but it seemed like we were sort of, you know, attacking, or we'd have control of the ball a lot more than they did. Obviously, when they got it, they were a lot more attacking and looking to counter us straight away. But I didn't think it was, it didn't seem that even to me at the ground. I thought we would have probably had a bit more possession, a bit more passes and everything.
I'd like to see how they broke down over the two halves. First half, I was thinking, we've had so much possession, how have we not managed to put one of them away? But maybe it evened out as we slowed the pace down once we got ahead. That would be interesting to look at, but I'm not Dave, so I don't have that detail in my stats. All right, let's talk about the good things, because the first half was pretty slow/frustrating, do we agree? Game of two halves, all the exciting stuff happened in the second half?
Like, there was a few chances and everything, but there wasn't any real clear-cut things in the first half, so I'm happy to agree.
Half-time, it really was anyone's game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we came out after half-time and managed to put the first goal of the game away. Lukey, tell me what happened there.
So, defending a Jakarta corner, Mossy claimed the ball, threw it out wide to Dimi, who turned one defender and put a big switch of play in over to Shepherd. Shepherd, what a ball he did. He grabs it, he takes control of it and then volleys it around the back, no look, straight to the path that Roy was running. And Roy runs into the box, squares it up to Ronnie, who loses his defender and taps it in. You know, the keeper almost got to it, but Ronnie did enough to get us the lead there.
He was good, that keeper, wasn't he?
Yeah, he saved him a lot. Like, there was, you know, I think a few of our shots probably went a bit close to him, but, you know, he couldn't really do anything for any of the goals, really. He, there was a lot of chances that he saved, a lot of one-on-ones that he saved as well. So, yeah, he was definitely one of their key players last night.
Andy, did you feel like I did, from a distance, his keeper kit was a little bit too much like our kit?
It was very similar.
I kept losing him in the kind of melee.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, how did everyone like the kit last night?
Oh, man, I love the kit.
Did you get one, Lukey?
I did get one.
Excellent. Andy, did you also like?
Yeah, when I first saw the concepts for it, I was like, oh, that's, you know, I didn't really like it. But then seeing it in person, it really grew on me, or not in person, but with them actually wearing it. It didn't seem to be as, you know, sort of Knights type deal that I thought it might have been originally. So
It was much more a Crystal Palace / Barcelona deal, which led to Crystal Palace sledging us on the social medias.
Yeah, see, that was weird. This jersey came out months ago. Like, the photos of it came out months ago, and they're only just getting onto it now.
Yeah, but it was the big day.
It was the big day, and they try and ruin it just because you guys can't play continental football.
Come at us, Crystal Palace. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I liked the kit. I thought it was very nice. It was nice to see so many people in the crowd wearing it as well. People getting behind that, because that's probably the only money we're making out of this if tickets were going for $10 a pop and there were only 6,000 of them sold. So, yeah. All right, so we thought we had it at that stage, I reckon. Everyone was, yes, we've broken them. We can get through this in 90 minutes and none of us will
vape. Floodgates are coming. Floodgates are open.
Oh, that's what I thought. Yeah, I thought, yeah, we've got a few more coming. Did not happen. They caught us at 72-ish minutes. Lukey, do you want to recap that one for me too?
It was poor defending, really. They had a couple of back-to-back corners, and they whipped it in, and there was a procedure player who was standing unmarked in the middle of the box, and he's just headed it, and there wasn't really much Moss could do for it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on who should have been marking him?
Well, there's two players there. I think one was Buga. I can't remember who the other one was at the top of my head, but there was two players that weren't marking anyone right near him, so one of them should have at least been closer of watching the man coming in.
Yes, I too pointed the finger at Boogs for that one. Luckily, Andy, he redeemed himself after we had to stretch to the extra time. One of his better efforts for the season.
Yeah, and corners have really started to worry me of late with the Jets, that just, you know, Dimmy will send it in and it'll go way over the top of everyone and somehow end up over the sideline. But this one just kind of fell neatly, and they didn't seem to rush in and think instantly head the ball. It was very, especially from Boogs, it was very controlled, and he let it sort of take the bounce and then have a shot. And I think in the press conference he said that he mishit it a bit, but it looked like it was pretty, you know, well composed and planned to me. So great to see him actually get a goal and restore a bit of faith, because I especially have been very, you know, this season should be his last season, and although he's our captain, we shouldn't necessarily waste a potential spot on him. But, you know, times like that are when those players that are a bit more aware and mature, I guess, are vital to the team.
His best effort for the year, I would say. Hopefully not a flash in the pan. Luke, do you think he's done enough to redeem himself from all the criticism we've given him this season?
Yes and no. That was by far the best game he's played this season. But it needs to be consistent now. We need to see it again, like, week in, week out.
And talking about Boogs, it's just interesting that, you know, we spoke just before about how, you know, he is having that sort of up and down where he might do one thing wrong but then does one thing good. And I just feel that that's, you know, the story of his season, is that we forget all these things when he does one thing right. But in that same game, not that much earlier, he's, you know, not covering in his core position as a defensive player to actually keep on his man and minimize the chance of something like that happening. So it's just interesting that he seems to be having that up and down season and hasn't been the consistent player that he can be.
It's pretty reflective of the rest of this team as well, I guess. You know, we look at how they went last year and everything, and it's, yeah, you can, you know, we've got a good performance in us like we did against the Wanderers, but then, you know, those same players the next week may just struggle. So, I tend to agree.
Yep, that's PCOS, isn't it? But I guess, you know, he has done a lot for the team. He is one of us, and we probably do have to forgive and forget to a point. And it definitely was a turning point in the game last night. And definitely getting to that point in the extra time was a very satisfying goal. I did have to eat some humble pie last night because after Boogs scored, Matty Redenton scored. You could knock me down with a feather. That's more than once now this year, and I did not expect to see that. Did he have an all right game last night, do you think, Luke?
Personally, I thought he was one of our two best players last night. When he came on, he just seemed to get into all this space. It just seemed to open up for him, and he looked like the one person who would make something happen when he came on. So I've been very critical of him, but for me, I thought he did fantastic when he came on last night.
Okay, let's talk about the sub strategy then. Their goal came right before Redenta was just about to come on, and their goal came, and then he got called back to the bench and didn't come on then for another 5-10 minutes. Do you think that our sub strategy, Andy, was the right one, or do you think we should have made a sub earlier, or upon reflection, having gone to extra time, are we glad that we held off on the subs?
I believe that it was, you know, if we made it to extra time, there was an additional sub that came into play or something like that. So I think that might have been in Ernie's mind a bit that, yep, we've gone, you know, they've equalised. If this goes to extra time, we can use someone that can come on fresh and run the entire extra time out. But it was interesting that, you know, with the potential of going to extra time and penalties, that he seemed to take off some of our main sort of penalty takers around that time. But yeah, overall, I think he seemed to get the sub strategy right with the players that were obviously in the squad and he could bring on, and keeping in mind future games and the schedule, I think he got it pretty right from the looks of things.
That's a good point, Luke. Did you feel like I did that after they scored, they were playing for penalties and we were playing to put it away in the extra time?
Absolutely. As soon as they got that equaliser, you could tell that the sort of, we've come to learn, the standard Asian Federation shithousery of time-wasting begun. It just seemed to be, as soon as that goal went in, there was players going down left, right, and centre. I think Yugarkovic got decked at one point. He's got up, and the Jakarta player that took him went down with cramps, and there was a number of those. You can say, yes, they are. You know, they are in their preseason and everything. They haven't had too many competitive games for this season, but it's just typical of the sort of thing you get when you go to this level. You look at what the Socceroos dealt with in the Asian Cup. You look at what the other Australian teams have to deal with during their Asian Champions League campaigns and stuff. And I said to my mates that were there, I was like, these guys are just, they're just time wasting, which is silly because we've still got another 15 minutes plus another 30 if it's still equal and everything. So, but I think at that point they were playing for penalties. It was just it was just typical behavior that we've got to get used to when we play these sort of teams in Asia.
Yeah, I've never seen so many men go down with cramps all at one time. And I was left thinking, do they not have Gatorade in Jakarta, or it Yeah, it was atrocious. And at one stage, two guys went down with cramps at once, and one of them realized that the other one was already having his cramps seen to, and so he got up so that he could save his issue for later. It was quite blatant, I felt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess you are right. That is the kind of thing that can happen, particularly at this level. Let's talk about some of the controversies of the match. Andy, how cheeky was Roy after one of these many, many injury stops, not doing the typical sportsmanly thing of passing the ball back after it had been put out?
To have that many players go down with cramp so, like, consistently and around each other and whatever, like, the entire squad got cramp within, like, the same 5-minute, 10-minute period. So, of course, when you're trying to win a game, like, sportsmanship, really, there were other players there. It wasn't like it was a direct one-on-one. Dimmy still had to actually, you know, put the ball over for Roy to run onto. So I don't think, whilst it was a cheeky thing, I don't think it was a wrong thing to do. And maybe they should have thought about that before they wanted to disrupt the game by just, you know, all night and falling over at the one time.
Lukey, if he'd scored off that, would there have been riots?
Yes, and from what I've read, if that had happened over in Indonesia, they probably wouldn't have got off the field alive. Mm. That's not even joking, from what I've heard.
Mm. So, and there were on a positive, there were a lot of Jakarta supporters there, heaps more than I expected.
Yeah, absolutely. If my issue is, if you're going to do that, finish it. Don't like, if you're going to do it, do a good job of it and finish it. Score the goal. I don't have a problem with it. You know, we go on about these players going down with cramps all in the one go, and you know, if we make it to the Champions League, this is what we'll have to deal with. And is that sportsmanlike? Not really, but you deal with it. So there's no rule that says that we have to kick the ball back to them. And people forget that, you know, if we're going to cop this wherever we go. If they go down, if any team gets a lead against us, we're going to cop this sort of behavior. And I think it was Roy just saying, nah, screw this, I'm not dealing with it. Like, you can't give us the decency of seeing a game out, and well, we're not going to give you the decency of giving the ball back.
Mm. They must feel like turkeys now, wasting time and then still ending up losing. Speaking of behaviour, Hunter Stadium did manage to continuously boo every time Simic got the ball the entire night. Now, the Jetstream doesn't have any lawyers to check our content like the mainstream news, so we're not going to mention what he allegedly did to get booed for the entire game. But he did get booed for the entire game, and quite consistently and aggressively. Boys, were you surprised to see that it really did get to him? I expected a professional level player to kind of lap that up and you know, feed off it. Did you think that was surprising, Andy? Could you hear it on the TV?
You could hear it loud and clear on the TV. It was like they'd bring in extra effects mics or something like that because they knew it was going to happen. And, you know, allegedly, as they like to always say in the news, until proven guilty, he has allegedly done something that, you know, may not have been very nice. And people, you know, take a really big thing against that now. And to have that player that was targeted and, you know, he got the boos every time. I mean, he probably could have handled it a bit better. Maybe bring Andrew Hull for some advice on how to deal with it. And, you know, that'd be what I would recommend for him because, yeah, whilst the first half he seemed to really, like, be able to cope with it. And then the second half it was like, oh, I just can't anymore. And anyone that gets the ball, I'm going to try and hack them down and whatever. So, yeah, I think it got to him more in the second half, whether it was the game pressure or what have you. Like, I don't know, but you'd definitely think as a player at his level that you would expect he's had that before or at least has the mental capacity to deal with it because, again, Hull does, so it can't be that hard.
Does he, though?
Oh, burn.
Well, you can never really tell because he's the same player whether he's getting booed or not.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's a set-piece taker, but at any time there's a set-piece in front of the squadron, he legs it. He goes the other way.
Yeah, I'm not sure Andrew is the best comparison. Without, again, mentioning the alleged incident, Luke, were you surprised that he played, given that there'd been a court appearance and a passport confiscation? Do you think that the Federation needs to take a stronger stand on that kind of thing and exclude players? I feel like if it was an NRL game, they would have cut him out of that match.
If, put it this way, if that was one of our players, I would not want them playing. So, no, I don't think he should have played. I said on the pregame last night that I was surprised that he was starting, and I didn't think he should be allowed to play. But the AFC have their reasons, so good on them. I half expected him to end up giving us hell in terms of, you know, scoring, just being a real pain to deal with all game. But as you said, the booing got to him, and good. Cop that. He, it was very obvious. I think at one point he threw gestures up to the Eastern Grandstand, which started the Simich is a douchebag chant, which I've been told is clearly audible on TV. Andy, you might be able to confirm. Yeah, there we go. So, and it was really good. I was sitting near the tunnel. The players walking in and out of, anytime he came anywhere near us, he got booed, and some of the insults that people were throwing at him were fantastic as well.
Well,
is
excellent.
It the whole thing that he's a foreign player? Does that really come into it in the, like, Indonesian league, that because he's a foreign player, he must play a certain amount of games or something, and they can't live without their foreign player?
Who knows? Either way, I wasn't impressed. Anyway, so I've done this all the wrong way around, and I didn't play the highlights at the start. So let's play the highlights, and you'll probably hear some of the things we just talked about done in a much more concise and exciting way.
Newcastle Jets welcomed Indonesian champions Persija Jakarta to Hunter Stadium for their first taste of continental football in almost 10 years. And on the half-hour mark, Roy O'Donovan should have put Newcastle in front.
Closed out. Georgievski crossed the face. O'Donovan!
The Irishman would make amends after the interval when he was given time to size up his options in the box.
O'Donovan, here is Ronnie Vargas. Two goals in 6 days for Ronnie. His first match in the Asian Champions League brings his first goal.
Yet Newcastle's lead would only last 22 minutes.
As it crossed the line, it has. And they've got the equaliser. And it is Ramdani Lestaluhu.
The Newcastle Jets just don't deal with it at all. It's a great header.
Tempers flared after O'Donovan and Petratos played on instead of giving Jakarta the ball. And with the game in extra time, captain Nigel Bogard found space in the box.
Bogard! He just loves playing in the Asian Champions League. His third goal in 17 matches.
Just for good measure, Matthew Rydenton killed off the game.
That will seal the deal. Matt Rydenton, he has threatened all night and gets a goal.
3-1 to the Jets, who must now overcome Kashima Antlers away on Tuesday to qualify for the AFC Champions League group stage.
Popo Stanley, Kantorovsky. Redenton.
Thanks, Fox Sports, for letting us steal your highlights, as always. And I should also probably throw the press conference now before we move on to our preview of the next game.
Champions League match between Newcastle Jets and Persija Jakarta. We have the man of the match, Nigel Bogard, and the head coach of Newcastle Jets, Ernie Merrick. Ernie, firstly, a comment on your team's performance this evening.
Oh, it was a tough game. Two very fatigued teams out there to go 120 minutes. I think we lasted longer. But it was an important win, and I keep bearing in mind that's our fifth game in 3 weeks, and we've won three, drawn one, and lost one to Perth away from home. So the boys have done really well.
Open for questions.
Ernie, how big of a concern is, I guess, going to extra time given the full-on schedule for the side of the month?
Yes, as I said, we played five games and now we've got two more games in 1 week. So really, Friday night is going to against Melbourne City is going to be our under 16 team, I reckon. It's not many of these boys could play and then go to Japan. And we have to fly, we have to leave, the bus leaves on Saturday morning after the Friday game at 5 o'clock in the morning. So it's going to be pretty tough going over to play in Kashima against the Antlers if the boys have to play on Friday night. So it's got to be a completely different team.
I know last week before the Wellington game you spoke about taking it one game at a time, but I guess given the position that the side's now in, do you look towards obviously prioritising the Japanese game?
I don't think it's as much prioritising as being sensible about the amount of the workloads on these boys. I can't keep turning out the same. That was virtually our best team. Maybe Joey Champness would have been on the bench and Jason maybe starting, I'm not sure, but we can't play on Friday and then fly to Japan, play again, then come back and play on the weekend. It's just too much. So we have to play a whole new team on Friday night as much as we can.
There's only a few guys on both sides to fill on at the end there. Was there any injuries at all for this?
As far as I know, we've got no injuries, but I think they're going pretty sore tomorrow. So tomorrow's session will be purely recovery at the Concept gym. I was a bit worried about that tackle on Matt Redenton, but he seems to be okay. In fact, the three boys that come off the bench early on up front, Angus Thurgate, Matt Redenton and Nick Cowburn all did a great job, and then just at the end we brought on the big fella Lachlan just to make sure there was no free headers on corner kicks.
Again, you created lots and lots of chances.
Yep.
Did it feel like it was going to be a frustrating night at one point? Or did it for me.
No, I thought we had the game won the first half, that many chances were created. And we either snatched at it or we didn't get in where to get the final touch or we mishit it. But the good thing is with this team, they don't give up. So then we went hard the second half and then we went hard in the extra time and we're the ones that survived the extra time better than the opposition. But for Procedure, a good team. The front three we nullified pretty well. The little midfielder got the goal. But defensively, rock solid. Midfield controlled most of the game. It was just up front. We didn't perform to our best.
Nigel, was it relief when you saw yours go in, mate? You don't score many goals. But that one, I guess, is a fairly important one.
Yeah, it was nice to obviously help the team. And at that stage, I think we really needed something to fall for us. And lucky enough, I mishit it and it went in. So at the end of the day, like Ernie said, we were creating chances and it was only a matter of time until we got one. But there's belief in this squad that as long as we stick to it, we'll keep creating chances. And at the end of the day, hope the majority of the time, the result will work its way.
Mate, you were probably favoured to win this one. You'll go to Japan as underdogs and given the time and the travel and everything. Is that something that sits better with you guys? Yet the pressure will be off and maybe that might spark a bit of freedom in the front third? Or
You're playing Champions League and as a professional footballer in this country, it's apart from playing in grand finals, it's the top of the top. And as you get older, you understand that there's only a few Champions League campaigns left in the body. And the boys have to understand that, yes, they may be reigning champions from last year, but what a stage to play on. I'm sure we'll go over there with hostile environment, a big crowd. They'll be confident at home. But as a footballer, these are the games you want to play, and you want to test yourself against the best teams in Asia. And hopefully the boys, we can recover well. We can go over there with confidence and really take it to them, because at the end of the day, playing Champions League is something special and something you'll remember forever.
In a way, that adrenaline rush and that excitement might help get over some of the exhaustion and the travel.
Yeah, for sure. As soon as you step onto that field and you realise what's at stake, all the rest of that goes into the back of your mind. At the end of the day, you focus on what your task is, and whatever that may be, that's first and foremost. And it's a knockout game, so at the end of the day there's no second chance and you've just got to leave everything out on the park. And I'm sure the boys will recover well and make sure they're up for it when we get over there.
What was the message that going into extra time and was there?
Extra time, bypass the midfield a little bit, push out and let's play the two 15-minute blocks in their half, but don't take a foot off the pedal. We wanted three strikers forward at all times, but they just had to work back as well.
Bugs, how's the body feeling?
Yeah, good. It's as Ernie alluded to, it's a heavy schedule, but at the end of the day, we're professional athletes, so we've got to make sure that we're able to get up for every game. And we're fortunate enough that we've got a very strong squad this year. And like I only mentioned, there was the boys that come off the bench done very well. So it's great to see that. Obviously, they're knocking on the door for a starting position. And with the heavy schedule, boys may need a little bit extra time to recover. But like I said, if you can't get yourself up for these games and get over whatever niggles or tiredness that's going on in your body, then you probably got to have a look at yourself, because it's kind of once in a lifetime opportunities to play in these competitions.
And the fact that you guys are match hardened, you go over there, does that sort of give you a bit of an advantage given where they're at?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be a benefit. As I say, most of the boys will get a rest on Friday, so they won't play now until next Tuesday. So they'll get a little bit longer, but we've been through some very tough times, and I remind you that even though we're not playing our best football, apart from one match against the Wanderers, in the last five have won three, drawn one, and lost one. So we keep producing results even though we're not playing at our best.
Final questions? Thank you, Ernie. Thank you, Burrows. All the best in Japan.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks again, Fox Sports. Hope you all enjoyed the post-match presser there. And nice to see Boogs sitting in on that post-match presser and not just Ernie. Did you guys like that as a different kind of style of presser, Andy?
Yeah, it was. I just found that, you know, it was very just straight. Like, Boogs was very, you know, just, yeah, it was great to be out there as a team. It's important to play all these games. Didn't really seem to have any real excitement that he'd just A, scored, and B, gotten through the next round. But my highlight of the presser was Ernie saying about putting out the under-16 team on the weekend against City, and then someone on Twitter I saw today took that as a literal thing that's happening and sort of fired back at Laurie about it. And Laurie was like, just so you know, the under-16 team play on Friday night, so therefore would not be capable of playing in two games at once.
Type deal. That's literally why I remembered to play the press conference right then, because I was thinking about who are we going to send out against Melbourne City this week. So Ernie did mention we'll need to rest a lot of those players. Do you think we're going to see the guys who subbed on who haven't had a lot of game time, like Angus Thurgate, Nick Cowburn, do you think we're going to see them playing on Friday night, or do you think they're going to be rested as well?
I would imagine that they'd be the ones starting. To me, if you're looking at players who'll be rested, you'd be looking at the guys who have been, who played the full 120, you know, probably Boogs and Topper Stanley. They are, you know, they're not exactly kids anymore. And for them to get through 120 minutes last night in that sort of temperature, huge effort, but you look at the recovery time it's going to take them compared to some of the younger players, and those are the heads we want leading us from the back against Kashima. So I think you want to, you'd probably rest, I reckon you've got to rest both of them, but then who do you bring on? You know, you've probably got Lockie Jackson as a natural replacement as one of them, but who would go next to him? You know, you've got Kanarovsky and Yugarkovic who'd probably need a break at some point. It'll be interesting to see if Hoffie's fit to play against City, or whether he's rested and potentially used against Kashima on Tuesday night.
Hoffie, I think, is an interesting one, because he obviously won't have any problem because he didn't play in this game. But as Ernie said in the presser, the bus is leaving early in the morning straight after this Friday night game to get them to Japan. So if Hoffie plays, then he pretty much is going to rule himself out of being peak condition, I guess, for that game. So what do you think is going to happen with him, Andy?
I think that they would hopefully manage it in a way. I don't know how long, like how much time they're spending on the ground when they get over there, and what sort of recovery they can do over there. And I just think that for this game on the weekend, we need to be using a lot of those players that did, if not all of those players that came on. And I'd even like to see Costa Petrados get a bit of a run, because any of the players that are part of the Champions League squad need to be at that level where they can just, you know, come on and do a job if they need to, because especially, you know, we haven't really experienced travel and stuff like that as a squad for a long time. So to have players that, you know, may just get an illness or something when they get over there, and it throws the whole plans out, so you need people with match fitness to come in.
So, Luke, Kashima's going to be a big ask. It's a pretty difficult team to come up against at this early stage. Do you think we pretty much forsake the City game so that we can preserve our efforts for Kashima?
That's what I'm expecting the team to do. We really lucked out drawing the current Asian champions to qualify for the Champions League. I don't know how we got that lucky. I think, you know, at this stage, you look at the draw, you look at the ladder and everything for us. There's 27 points left. We're 8 points behind sixth. It's probably not going to happen for us for finals football this year. I think you probably just turn your attention to, you know, we've got one game to qualify for the Champions League. Let's win that one and let's get to Asia and let's turn our attention to that and try and do a good job over there. You sort of see, you know, when we were in Asia last time, we finished last that season and still managed to qualify for the round of 16 in Asia. So I think we've got to turn our attention to that and, you know, not throw the game, but rest players so they are fit to play 90 minutes with the potential of 120 minutes next Tuesday.
Could we be peak Jets though, Andy, and go, we'll throw in the B team, we'll just have a crack, and actually that will be one of our best games of the year? That'd be peak Jets, wouldn't it?
It would be the game that everyone expects them to lose and then they come and win. But, yeah, I think also too with squad sizes in the A-League, it's been somewhat proven. Like, I'm pretty sure the Wanderers in the season that they went on and won the Champions League, from memory, they were well outside the finals, if not last or not far off it. So I think with, yeah, the salary cap and squad sizes, clubs need to decide, do they go for the Champions League and try and go long into the Champions League, or do they focus on the A-League when their sort of bigger competitors may be bound to Champions League at kind of the time that it fits in? Doesn't really work well with the current arrangement with salary caps and whatnot.
So Jair's going to be leading the charge this Friday night, Luke?
I reckon you could expect that, given that he's not in the ACL squad as of yet. If he doesn't, it's very telling, and I don't think he'd last here much longer if he's not starting.
Yes, interesting. Okay, so who on the Melbourne City team do we need to look out for this week? Where are their goals going to come from? Who are the trouble players, Andy?
I think you got to look at the new signing, Jamie McLaren. He's proven to score goals in the A-League. He scored in his debut for City last weekend against Adelaide. I think that's probably been their one thing that they've missed a lot of this season, which is their own doing, but it's having a striker on the field. You know, you got Fornaroli rotting in the stands for whatever reason, but now they actually have a striker on the field. You'll probably see City do get the results they've previously dropped, like the game against the Mariners.
Yeah, Andy, you agree?
Yeah, I think with a player like Luke Bratton actually having someone to get the ball to that can do something with it and not needing to, you know, do it all himself, I think they'll only benefit from that. So, and McLaren has a lot to prove, I feel, coming back at a time where people have sort of said, you know, stick it out, keep doing what you're doing over there. But now he's back and needs to be scoring goals, and that's what, you know, City have obviously brought him in for, so he has a lot to prove and will probably enjoy getting out there and hitting a few in.
I'm just really going to hope that Riley McGree doesn't come and score some goals against us, because that will be heartbreaking. Can we put goals past their keepers? Galekovic probably going to start. They've got Beres sitting on the bench, so that says how well Galekovic is doing. Lukey, do you reckon we can put any goals away this week?
I think City are usually good for conceding a goal, but we've got to be switched on. If we're going to be having players rested, whoever's coming in, they need to be scoring. If they're not scoring, at least creating chances, because this is the game you'll probably see a lot of the fringe players, the guys that haven't had a lot of game time this season. And maybe a bit unfair if they're not in amongst our sort of first team players, but if you're given a chance, you got to take any chance you get. So if they want to, you know, have a career with the Jets, if they want to be signed on longer and everything, they've got to try and make something against City.
Good point, Lukey. Let's see this as an opportunity to see something different, get a little bit of excitement, to see some guys who really have that drive to succeed this weekend. That could be actually a really exciting point.
You look at some of the players that are in the squad that, you know, haven't had a chance yet. We've got the young player, Jack Simmons. You know, this is a game that we could potentially get a debut out of him. And he's apparently a very exciting prospect. So if he's going to get a chance, you know, he is only 16. I'm probably talking more about the players who are going into their early 20s and stuff. But this is the sort of game that we might see a debut from one of our future stars.
Yep, get your spreadsheet ready, Dave. You might need to add some extras. All right, well, let's start with tips then for our game. We're not the first game of the round, but I'll back up later. Luke, what's your tipping?
I'm going to say, you know, I'm not expecting anything. I'm going to say City 3-0.
Andy?
I think it'll be a 1-1 draw.
Oh, an optimist. I'm going to go City 2, us 1. But a valiant effort, so I'll be proud. So we're playing Friday night. Before us, 5:30 our time, which would be later Wellington time, which makes sense now that I think about it. Wellington Phoenix are hosting Melbourne Victory. Andy, what do you reckon there?
Victory 2-1.
Lukey?
You know, both teams will want to pick up from their results last week. I'm going to say, man, I don't know. Krishna needs to do something for Wellington to go well. Honda didn't really impress too much on his return. I think he was a bit hesitant a lot. I'm going to probably say 1-1.
I'm going to agree with that. I can't separate them at the moment. I've got better feels for Phoenix, but also I'm not sure that they can pull it out. So, yeah, 1-1 as well. On Saturday, Adelaide host the Wanderers. Is this a done deal for Adelaide, Andy?
I think we'll be seeing another 5-1 result for Adelaide.
Poor Wanderers. Lukey, you agree?
I agree Adelaide will win. I don't think it'll be 5-1. I'm sort of thinking probably 2-1 or so.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bodie Special on that one because I think the Wanderers are just getting worse and worse, unfortunately, for them. In what might be an interesting game at 10 o'clock on Saturday night, in Perth, obviously, with a 10 o'clock start, they're hosting Brisbane Roar. Lukey, what you thinking there?
I'm going to say Perth 3-1. I think now that they've got Economides back, he's scored in his first two games since the Asian Cup. He's bringing his form back. He's continuing his form that he had pre-Asian Cup as well. I think they're just going to... you know, Brisbane did well against Sydney, but... you know, Sydney have had their problems this year. I think Perth, you know, with Popovich at the top, his teams don't put those performances in generally. So I'm going to say 3-1 Perth.
Andy, agreed?
I think 3-2 Perth, with Brisbane perhaps taking a 2-goal lead to begin with and then only playing a 45-minute game. So Perth coming through in the second half with 3 fairly quick goals and just taking it over. That seems to be the way Brisbane plays these days.
What, didn't they win in the final minute last week?
Yep.
Probably.
Yeah, I think Brisbane have got more in them than you guys are giving them credit for. I still don't think they'll win. I'm going to go 2-1 for Perth. And then on Sunday in the afternoon, Central Coast are travelling down to Sydney. The kind of blue-ish derby. What do you reckon's going to happen there, Luke?
Man, Sydney are going to need to perform. I'm going to say Sydney's going to win, but it's going to be disgusting. It's going to be a terrible game. I'm going to say, like, 2-1 Sydney.
Andy?
2-2 draw with the usual Central Coast scoring early and then losing it.
Yeah, I don't want to tip the Coasties, but I've got a weird feeling about this one, so I'm also going to tip a draw because that's as close as I can get to tipping them. All right, I feel like I've forgotten something, but as we said at the beginning, there's been a bit of a saturation of football lately, and we've got football on all these school nights, and now we're recording on a school night, and just can't keep all the thoughts in my head. Luke, do you have any closing thoughts on our match just gone, our match just coming?
I have a lot of thoughts about everything at the moment. As you said, football saturation. So this weekend's the W League Grand Final between Sydney and Perth.
Yeah, that'll be exciting, but we're not in it, and I don't want to talk about it because it hurts me.
No, we're not in it, but yeah, that's on. Hakeem's home, that's exciting.
That is very exciting, and well done to all the Jets fans who did the Save Hakeem hashtag, bought Save Hakeem signs to the ground. I know our Joel Goodsir changed his Twitter display to Save Hakeem. I did some signs at the ground as well, and many, many people did. Well done to everyone involved in that, and Craig Foster for PM.
Yeah, Craig Foster has done absolutely phenomenal work with Hakeem, and it's great to have him back in the country. Hopefully he's able to move on from this saga and be able to enjoy his life again.
I just hope he gets a second chance at a honeymoon. I hope someone's going to do some crowdfunding for that, because he did not get to honeymoon in the end, which is a little bit sad. Andy, yeah. Any final thoughts on where we're at and where we're going?
The only thing I was going to ask is, how was it being in a blank stadium with no sort of sponsorship or anything?
I actually found it kind of hilarious that they told us specifically that they can't call it McDonald Jones Stadium, and then the McDonald Jones was the only branding up in the stadium. But yeah, I didn't really notice after the beginning. Did you notice?
I thought it was funny that they've called it Hunter Stadium because of AFC regulations, but if you went on the AFC website, it said McDonald Jones Stadium.
I thought the most nonsense thing is you weren't allowed on the hills.
Yeah, that was really annoying.
And it wasn't, like, just I get the idea of there being a rule that you've got to be, everyone's in a ticketed seat and that, but they literally were not even letting people, little kids playing soccer on the hill during the game. They weren't even allowing that. I thought that was a bit much, but anyway.
Yeah, I turned to the Southern Hill at one point and couldn't, I've never seen it that bare before. There was just no one on the grass at all.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing. But they also didn't open the bars up there as well, so, yeah.
Do they not know that's what Jets fans need, is beer to get through games?
Yeah, I was a bit annoyed that they closed the bars still at the normal time, even when we went to extra time. Not smart,
I did have one last thing as well, Emma. I don't know, everyone checked the Jets Facebook page. They put a video up earlier this afternoon, which, when you guys listen to this, will be Wednesday afternoon. It was a video thanking the Persija Jakarta supporters for all the love they've shown us, quote unquote, over the last week. And it's a good montage of some of their finest comments that they left for us.
Yes, I feel like there's a lot of air quotes being used in there with love and finest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there is.
Yes, a few people have sent that to me today, and yes, good for a laugh, especially in the light of having won. All right, I think we've gone on long enough. Sorry for the poor effort. As we said, football saturation, have day jobs. Day jobs extend to night jobs sometimes, and I'm a little bit tired and words aren't coming out that good. Despite my poor showing, I do need to tell you we are a media empire, so see us on all the socials, Jetstream TV, pre-match. We're all a bit done after the heat and the extra time last night. We didn't do a post-match, but, we're backing up now, so everything's fine. All that remains to do then is thank these boys for joining me. Thank you for joining, Lukey.
Thanks for having me, Em. And can I just say to the Persija Jakarta supporters that may be listening, the mighty Jets shoot down the Wimpy Tiger.
Maybe that can be Anthony's next tattoo. We'll have to workshop that one in the group chat. Andy, thank you so much for joining me. Good to have you back, mate.
No worries. Be keen to be on a lot more as I now have the time to do these kind of things. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, congrats on your new job, mate.
Cheers.
Excellent. Well, all right. So I guess all that remains to say is go the Jets and sod the Wimpy Tigers. Go the Jets.
Vamos, El Jocos, and Soto the Tigro.
What Luke good? Said.
Andy, I'm not cutting the recording till you say go the Jets. It's bad luck.
go the Jets.
Good boy. Well, I'm down, Benjamin.